All the King's Horses, 2. The water made a sullen gurgling sound somewhere in the close, hot blackness. The world twisted and turned, sinking. He was too weak and dizzy to move. He felt icy fingers on his legs, creeping up higher and higher, and then sudden shock as the water reached his crotch, jolting him awake. He tore away his seat harness with numb fingers, but too late. The cold caressed his chest, and he lurched up, and the floor tumbled, and he lost his footing. And then the water was over his head, and he couldn't breathe, and everything was black, utterly black as the grave, and he had to get out. He had to get out. Tom woke, gasping for breath, a scream clawing at the inside of his throat. In his first groggy waking moment, he heard the faint tinkle of broken glass falling from the window frame to shatter on the bedroom floor. He closed his eyes, tried to steady himself. His heart was trip-hammering away in his chest, his undershirt plastered to his skin. Only a dream, he told himself, but he could still feel himself falling. Blind and helpless, locked in a coffin of burning steel as the river closed in around him. Only a dream, he repeated. He'd lucked out. Something had exploded the shell and he'd gotten out. It was over. He was alive and safe. He took a deep breath and counted to 10. And by the time he hit 7, he'd stopped trembling. He opened his eyes. His bed was a mattress on the floor of an empty room. He sat up, the bedclothes tangled around him. Feathers from a torn pillow floated in the shafts of sunlight that came through the broken window, drifting lazily toward the floor. The alarm clock he'd bought last week had been flung halfway across the room and had bounced off a wall. A series of random numbers blinked red on its digital LED display for an instant before it went dark entirely. The walls were pale green, utterly bare, and spiderwebbed with a growing network of cracks. A chunk of plaster dropped from the ceiling. Tom winced, untangled himself from the sheets, and stood up. One of these nights, his fucking subconscious was going to bring down the whole house on top of him. He wondered what his neighbors would make of that. He'd already reduced most of his bedroom furniture to kindling, and the plasterboard walls weren't holding up real well either. Then again, neither was he. In the bathroom, Tom dropped his sweat-soaked underwear into the hamper and stared at himself in the mirror over the sink. He thought he looked 10 years older than he was. A couple of months of recurring nightmares will do that to you, he supposed. He climbed into the shower, closed the curtain. A half-melted bar of Safeguard sat in a film of water in the soap dish. Tom concentrated. The soap rose straight up and floated into his hand. It felt slimy. Frowning, he gave the cold faucet a good hard twist with his mind, and he winced as the stream of icy water hit him. Very quickly, he grabbed for the hot faucet with his hand, turned it, and shuddered with relief as the water warmed. It was getting better, Tom reflected as he lathered up. 20-odd years as the turtle had atrophied his telekinetic abilities almost to nothing, except when he was locked inside his shell. But Dr. Tachyon had helped him understand that the block was psychological, not physical. He'd been working on it ever since, and it had gotten to the point where bars of soap and cold water faucets were candy. Tom stuck his head under the showerhead and smiled as the warm water cascaded down around him, washing away the last residue of nightmare. Too bad his subconscious didn't realize his limits. He'd feel a fuck of a lot safer going to sleep, and maybe his bedroom wouldn't be such a mess when he woke up. But when the nightmare came, he was the turtle. Weak, dizzy, falling, and about to drown. But still, the great and powerful turtle who could juggle locomotives and crush tanks with his mind. The late great turtle. All the King's Horses and all the King's Men, Tom thought. He turned off the spray, shivered in the sudden chill, and climbed out of the tub to towel off. In the kitchen, he fixed himself a cup of coffee and a bowl of bran cereal. He'd always thought bran cereal tasted like wet cardboard, and these new, extra-healthy bran cereals tasted like wood shavings. But his doctor said he had to get more fiber and less fat in his diet. He was also supposed to cut down on his coffee, but that was a hopeless case. He was an addict by now. He turned on the small TV next to the microwave and watched CNN as he sat at the kitchen table. The city was launching a full-fledged investigation of corruption in the Manhattan District Attorney's Office, which seemed like the least they could do now that one of their assistant DAs had been exposed as a mafia don. Indictments were promised. Rosa Maria Gambioni, alias Rosemary Muldoon, was still being sought for questioning. But she'd vanished, gone underground somewhere. Tom didn't figure she'd be turning up anytime soon. He'd felt guilty about ignoring Muldoon's appeal for ACE volunteers when the gang war had begun raging in the streets of Jokertown. It wasn't like the turtle to ignore a plea for help, and if he'd had a working shell or the money to build one, his resolve might have softened enough to bring the turtle back from the dead. But he hadn't, so he didn't, and now he was glad of it. Pulse and Water Lily and Mr. Magnet and the other aces who'd responded had put their lives and reputations on the line, and now they had hack politicians going on the evening news demanding that all of them be investigated for ties to organized crime. It was times like this that made Tom glad that the turtle was dead. On the tube, they moved to the international desk for an update on the Aces tour. Peregrine's pregnancy was already old news, and there had been no new violence like the incident in Syria, thank God. Tom watched footage of the stacked deck landing in Japan with a certain dull resentment. He'd always wanted to travel, to see distant exotic lands, visit all the fabulous cities he'd read of as a child, but he'd never had the money. Once, the store had sent him to a trade show in Chicago, but a weekend in the Conrad Hilton with 3,000 electronics salesmen hadn't fulfilled any of his childhood dreams. They should have asked the turtle to be on the tour. Of course, transporting the shell might have been a problem, and he couldn't get a passport without giving them his real name, which he wasn't prepared to do. But those problems could have been handled if anyone had cared enough to bother. Maybe they really did think he was dead, though Dr. Tachyon at least ought to have known better. So here he was, still in Bayonne with a mouthful of high-fiber bran, while the likes of Mistral and Fat Man and Peregrine were sitting under a pagoda somewhere, eating whatever the hell the Japanese ate for breakfast. It pissed him off. He had nothing against Perry or Mistral, but none of them had paid the dues he had. Jesus Christ! They'd even invited that scumbag Jack Braun. But not him. Oh no! That would have been too much fucking trouble. They would have had to make special arrangements, and besides, they had so many seats allocated for aces and so many for jokers, and nobody quite knew where the turtle fit. Tom drank a mouthful of coffee, got up from the table, and shut off the TV. Fuck it all, he thought. Now that he'd decided that the turtle was going to stay dead, maybe it was time that he buried the remains. He had a notion or two about that. If he handled it right, maybe by this time next year, he could afford to take a trip around the world, too.